Oregon's history with African Americans may be unique. It was not a slave state ever, though it joined the country just before the Civil War. Oregon also did not want to deal with darker Americans as free people either. Exclusion laws that kept black people out of the state stayed in the books into the 20th century. Now, while the exclusion laws and the Ku Klux Klan and control of state government are features of the past, they've shaped the present in the state. Oregon is still a place with few people of color. Today's guest travels the state offering a workshop he calls Racism 101, The Real Story. Ajamu Umi is our guest. He has a master's degree in economics from Sacramento State University. He spent his entire adult life as an organizer in the All African People's Revolutionary Party, AAPRP. He's the author of two works of fiction and lives in Portland. Ajamu, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's very much a pleasure. I see that you're giving two sessions, one tonight at 6:30 at the Newman United Methodist Church in Grants Pass, one tomorrow at 6 in Medford at the NALC building on Holly Street. So you're on the way to the area. Tell us about the work you do generally and the work of the AAPRP. I'm going to try not to call it AARP, but it's hard not to.
Yeah. It's a common thing. Well, in terms of the workshop, I mean, the fundamental foundation, the fundamental message that we're putting out with the workshops is that institutional racism against people of color is a system that benefits the super rich in this society. I'm talking about the multinational corporate entities that dominate the economics of this world today. That's who put the system in place. That's who maintains it. And that super rich element, that super rich class of people has a vested interest in convincing the majority of everyday working class white people that your primary problem is people of color. We've seen this play out time and time again. If you go back in history at the time of the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation and the ending of chattel slavery in this country in 1863, what you saw is this propaganda developed that, okay, now these people who previously were being forced to work for free are now going to be competing against you, white people, to take your jobs and drive your wages down. You know, we saw that as a dominant narrative then. And we see that same narrative being used today against people who are immigrants from primarily Central and South American countries. They're going to take jobs and take something away from you, so you need to be concerned with them instead of understanding that the people who are really robbing and stealing are the big major corporations. You know, all of us that work subsidize corporations like Kmart with our pay. And I don't know about you, but Kmart's the largest corporation in the world. I don't want to subsidize Kmart. So the message in this workshop is that if you subscribe to these ideas of racism against people of color, then you're benefiting the super rich.
And the point you're saying then is that as long as the people who have lots of money keep the people who don't have lots of money fighting with each other, they're not going to turn their attention upwards?
Absolutely.
You said Kmart. Did you mean Walmart?
Walmart, yeah.
Okay, just check, because I didn't think Kmart was doing that well these days.
Yeah.
All right, you've put some miles on in the process of getting your message across. Tell us about the places you've worked and the places you've traveled, Ajamu.
Let's see, we've done these, well, you know, I've done a lot of work. I mean, I've lived in Africa doing work for years, but in terms of this particular workshop, in Oregon, it's been done in Hood River, Scappoose, Astoria, Ben, Redmond, Tillamook, and this week it's going to be Grants Pass and Medford. So, you know, getting the message around to people, people are responding enthusiastically because, you know, we hit hard in terms of the message of what's going on, but also I think what people like about it is we have a big space where we're talking about what we can do to solve it, and there's something for everybody in that process. So it's something that people can plug into and say, okay, yeah, I don't want to be this type of person. I don't want to support this type of thing. So these are the types, this is what I can do to make it better.
And who is helping you get the word out on tour? I mean, are you generally invited to the communities you're coming to? Is it a tour set up by, I don't have the number, the name in front of me, but the project that brings you around Oregon, there is some support here, right?
Yeah, there's the Rural Organizing Project, the ROP.
ROP, that's
what they're a cool group. What they do is they work in rural areas in Oregon, and they work with white communities with an anti-racist message and work. And so they've been in the forefront of helping promote this series. And then, you know, local groups in each area, like this group is being sponsored by, these two sessions are sponsored by Oregon Action, which is another group that has a racial justice component in its agenda and the work that it does, and several other groups that are, you know, involved in this work. So it's a collection of progressive-minded people and people who are engaged in actions that are promoting this work.
Your criticism of the economic system, I wonder if that extends to higher education as well. And I ask this because you refer on your website to where you got your diploma, Sacramento State, as sacrificial state, and you refer to degrees as receipts.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's unfortunately, you know, again, because education has become less and less of a process where people gain critical thinking skills and more of a process where people are trained to work for the super elite. So, you know, that's my tongue-in-cheek reference to that, you know, if you go to colleges and universities today, you know, everyone's trying to say whatever they think the professor wants to hear instead of creating critical arguments that challenge the status quo. And so, you know, I think one of my missions is to bring that message out, that the point of education is to advance society, not just to make money. And if you go on a college campus today and take a survey, the majority of students are going to tell you they're there so they can get a job and make money. And that's not the point of education. I mean, where I come from, people make money many different ways. People sell drugs and make money. People kill people and make money. So it can't just be, your objective can't just be making money, because there are many unscrupulous ways you can do that. So if you're taking the time and energy to get an education, it has to be about developing your mind and developing your understanding of the world and trying to use that information to make a difference. You know, especially people of African descent. I mean, that's the only reason why we have education, is because people sacrificed and struggled so that we could gain that capability, so that we can use the knowledge to improve conditions. So, you know, I have to advance that message in everything I do.
Ajamu Umi, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He hosts the workshop Racism 101, The Real Story, tonight in Grants Pass, tomorrow night in Medford. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about racism and how it presents itself in Oregon and California, anywhere, really. Join us at 800-838-3760. That's anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I'm curious about the approach to education that you give about it's less about critical thinking skills and more about getting out and getting a job, because I hear this tension a lot, particularly from young people. It's like, I didn't get out of college with usable skills to get a job. And then on the other hand, you hear lots of complaints, generally from people older than those students, saying, you know, they come out of college without any critical thinking skills.
Right. And I think that, you know, this is something that this is a challenge for young people and people of any age, really, who are engaged in the official, quote-unquote, educational process of higher education and learning, is, you know, what is that really about? And I think what we have to do is develop a more creative approach to this whole process and understand that, you know, the objective can't be just to get jobs for the corporate elite. You know, how can we use our skills and capability to create new opportunities for people to earn incomes and support themselves and their families in ways that are not exploitative or contributing to exploitation in the world today? You know, how can we do that? You know, and one of the things that we talk about in the workshop is this entire economy in this society was built and it's maintained on exploiting places like Africa, African resources, and we talk about that quite a bit. You know, and most people here don't know that, don't ever think about it. You know, there are ways that we can, you can't tell me that that's the only way that we can acquire comfort and economic progress, is to stand on the backs of other people around the world and to take their resources and to do it that way. There, with all this knowledge that's supposedly taking place in these institutions, there has to be a way we can develop more creative and more sustainable ways that are progressive and that are designed to uplift people and not drag people down.
Not squish them down further. Let's take some calls here. We have Ann and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ajamu Umi.
Thank you. And I think you're doing a really valuable thing for the entire country. I'm constantly astounded how white journalists ignore the pervasiveness of racism in this country and how it's used politically. For instance, I believe that if President Obama was a white male Republican, instead of a 42% approval rating, he'd have at least a 62% approval rating, given exactly the same record. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that, Ann. Well, I figured we'd get to that eventually. Should get to it a little sooner than I'd planned. But that is a big point of discussion, is like people keep talking about racism in America in the context of, well, we elected a black man to the White House, but the way he's been treated since he got in there surprises a lot of people who favored him in the first place.
Right. And I think, you know, I mean, that's a complex question when you bring in Obama. I mean, there's no question that, you know, people's individual attitudes and how they perceive him is certainly influenced by, you know, the racist ideology that dominates this society. But then at the same time, there's a paradox that exists, because he, in the position he occupies, I would argue, still, in spite of who he might be as an individual, he still represents the interests of, primarily the interests of the super economic elites that I've been talking about. He still represents that. Anyone who's president of the U.S., their primary responsibility is to represent those interests. So, you know, it's like it's a dichotomy that exists. But, yeah, certainly you can look at how people respond to him, and you can see how the attitudes manifest themselves.
All right, another call here from Dennis and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ajamu Umi.
Hi. Say, I am not a person that denies that there's racism in America. I think there is, and I also think that everybody has a little bit of racist tendencies, no matter what color they are. And I have in my family, we have what you call multicultural family. We have a lot of different colored people in my family, and a lot of interracial marriages, and a lot of kids that are half of something and half of another thing. And one of the things that I've noticed in my family is that all the folks in my family have went to school, and after they got out of school, they continued their education, you know, in things that they were interested in or things that they needed to know about getting improving their job or whatever. And none of these folks, none of my relatives, ever talk about how they're being picked on because of their color. And I actually think that it's because of education. They don't look at the world that way. They look at the world as a place where they can do whatever they want, no matter what, and they go out and they try and do it. They start their own businesses, they raise their families, they, you know, I mean, they don't even think of themselves as Mexican or Filipino or American Indian. They think of themselves as Americans. They all have become American citizens, and they don't really relate to this racism thing.
Were they given generally pretty good educational opportunities, though, Dennis?
No, because most of them came from the, like, Philippines or the American Indian Reservation or from Mexico. You know, there are not good educational opportunities in those countries.
All right, so education is the key here. I think we get the message. Thanks for that, Dennis. Appreciate it. Ajamu, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, what the gentleman is saying, I mean, that's a commonly articulated theme. And you know, what it's based in is this idea that racism is an individual thing. You can either acknowledge it or not. And depending upon how you acknowledge it, it may or may not impact you. I mean, obviously, there are many more components to it. And all I would say right now is, you know, if people come to the workshop, we get into that deeply and we analyze it and break it down. I mean, I'm a person, in terms of the American capitalist system, I've had quite a bit of individual success with it. I mean, I came out of the inner city housing projects. You know, I put myself through school, worked myself through college, got advanced degrees, have worked, become an author, traveled all over the world on my own. So, you know, I don't need anybody to tell me about how to, you know, progress individually. But this system we're talking about is much more than that. It's much more than that in terms of how its institutional impact, and the institutional impacts of racism are so insidious, most people don't even know how to detected or identified, and certainly don't know the impact that it has on people. So, you know, you can always point to individuals and say, well, this individual did this, this individual did that. And I could be one of those people you point to, but that does nothing to negate the impacts of the system. And, you know, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And again, that's what we talk about quite a bit when we analyze this question. And I think that's one of the fundamental problems in this society is that, people just simply don't understand it. They don't understand how it manifests itself. They don't understand what it's based on. You know, when I say things like I said earlier about how this entire economy is based on exploiting Africa, people don't understand that. They immediately disagree with it, but they don't understand. They don't understand it. And these are the things that we talk about in the workshop. So, you know, if you're here in America or if you come to America from another country, you don't understand. You think that when you have success here, that's because of something you've done individually. And a lot of that has to do with how the system is set up. And so that's what we want to try to educate people about.
All right, let's take another call. We have Ryan and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ajamu Umi, who presents the workshop Racism 101 tonight in Grants Pass, tomorrow in Medford.
Well, good morning. This is a fascinating conversation. It happened to be something I was thinking about as I was getting ready this morning. And one of the things that I'm you know, just aware of in sort of the corporate marketing of fear and fear of other, fear of, you know, all of these other pieces, it's really fed into what I consider to be a very individualistic and then the fear placed on that. And I think that one of the things that Obama brought to the table, and actually I think Bill Clinton did as well to a degree, was a sense of communitarianism. You know, we're in this together. There are big, wickedly complex problems, economics, racism, climate, pick your complicated, intense, and communitarianism is a part of the answers, you know, that we're in this together collectively as the tide floats, as, you know, all boats, whatever the metaphor is. And so I'm just intrigued, and thank you. Thank you for your work, and I hope the workshop is a success. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for that, Ryan. Appreciate that. Jama, when you talk about exploiting Africa, do you mean exploiting Africa today, that the economic system is based on exploiting Africa now?
Correct. Like, I can go on all day, but I'll give you and your listeners one quick example. Most people in this society have no idea what colonite tantalite is, or what is commonly called coltan. It's a mineral ore that is found primarily in the Congo. It's also found in plentiful supplies in Rwanda and Mozambique. And what this mineral ore is used for is it harnesses communication technology. So you could not have the digital age without it. You could not have cell phones without it. You could not have computers, laptops, tablets, any of these devices without it. It's the mineral that harnesses gives these devices the capability to communicate. And so it's a hot commodity. And like I said, primarily you can only find it in large, plentiful supplies in Central Africa. It goes for about $400 U.S. dollars a pound on the international market today. Obviously, this is not a natural mineral that is pulled out of these countries in a way that benefits these countries. It's done in a way that benefits big, huge European and American corporations who set up the system to do this. And this is how you can talk about oil, you can talk about gold, diamonds, you can talk about uranium, rubber. All of these minerals are exploited from Africa the same way. So that's what I mean when I say this society, as we know it today, could not exist if these exploitative systems that have been established for quite some time were not still maintained today. And there's no question that process, how it's maintained, is done in a racist fashion, institutionally.
Something like economic colonialism, in a sense. We're going to take your stuff and give you pennies for it. Is that
right? And we call it neo-colonialism now. That's the, in my view, is the dominant problem in Africa today.
So in the process of recognizing and dealing with racism at the local level, I mean, do we try to fix our local communities and then fix America beyond that and then try to deal with the rest of the world and the exploitation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main message that we have for people is if we want a better society, we have to be willing to get involved and do something about it. So getting people involved on a local level and raising these questions and engaging in them, studying about them, and engaging people in the community about them. And it doesn't matter if you You know, I mean, I go out with men all the time, and when they say, when someone says something inappropriate about women, then I challenge that. It doesn't, there doesn't have to be just doing that when women are present. So it doesn't matter if there are people of color in your community or not, because if that mentality exists, it still benefits the people who are, have put it in place and their reasons for putting it in place. So if we can begin to engage that on a local level, it'll create a climate change and a cultural change that'll lead to a better thought process and a better coexistence in this society.
So what we're thinking of as jokes are actually oppression?
I mean, you know, people can tell jokes. I'm not saying people can't have a good time, but I think we have to understand, we have to lay a foundation under that so that, you know, if we begin to create a foundation where there's mutual respect for people, then the joke is simply a joke. But right now, with what we have in place, there really isn't any such thing as a joke. What we have is everything like that that happens is a part of the continual process to perpetuate ignorance and to perpetuate a dehumanization of people.
Ajama Umi, your most recent book is The Courage Equation, and deal, it's a piece of fiction, but it deals with white supremacists in Oregon. This doesn't sound like it's terribly far removed from the real world, necessarily.
Yeah, and this is a book that it's in the process of being released, and the reason why I wrote it is because when I would travel around, I'd be in places like Bend, and people would always tell me, well, I don't see race, and I would tell them, well, if you didn't see race, you couldn't say you didn't see race, so you do see race. And they would always say that, though, so I began to think, you know, I wonder if, like, there was a situation where there were, like, 500 African people that just showed up here today, how much that would impact the dynamics of the society. So that's where I got the idea for the book, because that's essentially what happens there, and it creates all these problems. And there's no question in my mind, if that really happened in real life, that it would create a severe dynamic shift. And so I think that that's an interesting talking point to get people thinking about, you know, how we look at this in this society. Because I'm always hearing that. I don't see race. And the minute you take that person that's saying that and put them in an environment where they're the only white person, that's all they would see is race.
Right, and a whole different situation. Much more time and much more to talk about with Ajama Umi. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk more with him. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange on the backside of this break as we talk about racism 101 and recognizing and dealing with racism in society. Back with Ajama Umi and your phone calls and emails in a minute here on the Jefferson Exchange. It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're not just on the radio. We're also online at jeffexchange.org and on Facebook, on Twitter at Jeff Exchange. And, of course, you can take part in our conversations as they happen, including this one already in progress. Ajama Umi is an organizer in the All-African People's Revolutionary Party based in Portland, travels the state and the country and the world, for that matter, talking about trying to end racism and achieve equality. And he'll be delivering a workshop in both Grants Pass and Medford tonight and tomorrow, Racism 101, The Real Story. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the issues now. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Ajama, you're following Walida Imarisha by a few months in Grants Pass. Her talk is on why aren't there more black people in Oregon. Grants Pass in particular certainly has some history of racism, as do other cities in Southern Oregon. Is there any particular perspective you bring in on if it's doing much better today or not surprisingly as much better as people would think?
Well, I mean, I don't think that there's really any qualitative improvement. In fact, I was with my daughter. My daughter and I traveled to Mississippi in April, and, you know, people always like to, you know, Mississippi's the whipping boy of racism in America. So people always like to talk about, oh, it's so terrible there. And, you know, and I tell people here in Oregon, actually, in some ways, it's preferable because at least there you know exactly where people are coming from. You know, whereas here, what I find is a lot of times, you know, people smile in your face and you have to, you know, be quite aware of what happens when you turn your back, because a lot of the end result is the same in terms of you look at all the problems that exist that are manifestations of institutionalized racism. They're all alive and well here in this state. The prison industrial complex, the disparity of sentencing for people, housing discrimination. I've experienced housing discrimination here myself. police, terrorism against communities, all of that exists alive and well in Oregon. So people shouldn't fool themselves into thinking that this is some paradise that's any different than in any other place.
Have we at least gotten to a point, do you think, where racism is less intentional and more, I don't know, vestigial or instinctual or something?
Well, I think it's more institutional now. So, you know, you don't have Klansmen standing in front of schools keeping people out, but you have things like disparate sentencing. You have the process of miseducation, so that the end result is still the same. So, you know, these are the things we have to look at. Like, you know, part of the workshop I talk about, because I've studied economics and I studied the banking industry and participated in it and have done quite a bit of research on it, I was engaged in looking at a lot of predatory loans that took place in the mortgage industry here in Portland. And I talked in the workshop about how that process happens, because people don't really understand what predatory lending is and how it's discriminatory and how it happens. And so, you know, we talk about how sophisticated it is. It's not a situation where someone says, oh, that person is of color, I don't like them. It's much more insidious. So we talk about how that manifests itself that way.
And that's a really curious topic, because I remember hearing a lot of the discussion leading up to actually coming out of the economic collapse was like, well, you know, everybody was looking for somebody to blame. And of course, there were lots of reasons to blame the people who tried to get loans out there in the first place, the people who really weren't in a position to pay them back. You know, the Fannie Freddie blame. But then there were people like George Will who blamed it on the people who went looking for those loans. And it really got to the level of how dare they?
Yeah. Well, and that's absurd. I mean, everybody knows, anybody that has common sense knows, if I have money and you come to me to borrow money from me and I know you can't pay me back and I lend it to you, whose fault is that? I mean, you can blame the person for asking for the money, but who has the responsibility of making the decision that is in the best interest of everyone? And so, you know, we have to ask the questions. First, we have to understand why someone would make that kind of decision, because there is a reason, and who benefited. Again, that's the question people have to learn to ask. When something happens, who comes out on top? You know, clearly it's not the people who got these loans, because they've lost their houses and many of them have become homeless. You know, so they haven't benefited from this. Who has actually benefited from this entire process, and what is it based on? And so, you know, we talk about these things because, again, this is the perspective that people don't understand. They think they understand it, but you don't understand it. And so we come in and we give you information to help you understand it so you can realize how this system actually operates.
We have an email here from Mike in Medford. He wants to know if you use biology and anthropology to try to explain the absurdity of racism. He says, if everyone understood that through human migration we all come from Africa, this might make an easier understanding of skin color and the pointlessness of racism. That, again, from Mike in Medford.
Yeah, and that's, you know, of course, that's an interesting point. And we go in depth in explaining the sociological reasons why this ideology of racism was created. I mean, it doesn't stand up. What the gentleman is presenting, it doesn't stand up to the actual scientific history, but it doesn't have to, because it is, as someone mentioned, and one of the previous callers mentioned, it's all about appealing to fear and people's fear of losing something. And that's played time and time again. I gave the examples of slavery and then the immigrants time and time again. So we talk about that a great deal.
And so what are some of the, I mean, you talk about in Racism 101, the real story, recognizing racism in the first place. So for folks, is it even possible for people in a white-on-white situation to recognize racism?
Well, it is, and again, we do that quite a bit in terms of giving people an understanding of how the system works so that you can begin to learn how to identify how it manifests itself. You know, the things that happen that manifest institutionalized discrimination. So that's what we're trying to do with this workshop, is give people an understanding of how to identify that and then give people ideas on things they can do to try to eliminate it.
Ajamu Umi, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He presents a workshop called Racism 101 tonight in Grants Pass at the Newman United Methodist Church at 6:30. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, in Medford at 6 o'clock at 228 North Holly Street, which is the NALC building. just a little bit north of the Holly Theater. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange now with questions, comments about racism, action against racism, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. How many times have you delivered the workshop, do you think, by now, Ajamu?
I've lost count. It's been a number of times, and there are a number of requests that continue to come in, which is great. You know, because it's all about, and I mean, sometimes people have money to contribute to the workshop, and sometimes they don't. Whatever money comes my way, I funnel it back into the work that I do. So, you know, this is what I live for. I mean, I'm proud and to do this work and want to continue to do it for as long as I'm able.
Is there a lot of talk back with the audience? I'm curious to know if over the years you've gotten some anecdotes and stories and situations that really hung with you and may have become part of the program.
You know, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of people who come to these programs. They have a lot of passion to deliver, people of all nationalities, you know, and it's really, and I stay in touch with people and have developed some great relationships as a result of doing this particular aspect of the work. And so, yeah, I mean, people are very much a part of it. And so I encourage people to come and participate. And, you know, people can come. They don't have to, first, you don't know what I'm going to say. So you don't have to, if you think you do, you don't have to agree with what you think you're going to hear. You know, this is all about, again, the exchange of ideas. So we encourage people to come who are respectful, but who, you know, want to express their point of view. And this is how we learn. You know, this is anything. I mean, any, as Frederick Douglass said, there's no progress without struggle, so we're not afraid of struggle.
Well, there's a letter here from Debbie in Talent, an email here. She says, I read letters in the newspaper about President Obama that are clearly racist. Those are the people who need to hear your message, but they aren't the people who will attend your presentation. How can we lift the cover off thinly veiled racism? And let me add to that, how do you make sure that you're not just preaching to the choir, that people who are really in need of hearing the message come?
Well, and that's the point of this workshop. There really is no preaching to the choir because I understand. I mean, there's a perspective out here that people see racism as an individual attitude, as I mentioned before. So people say, because I don't have that individual attitude and this person to the left of me does, that's the person that needs to be talked to. But the reality is that the institutional setup, of how racism is perpetuated is something that I find the overwhelming majority of people don't really understand. People think they understand it, but they don't really understand it. And that's what we talk about in this workshop. So whether you consider yourself a liberal Democrat or whether you consider yourself a Ku Klux Klansman, we are all participating in the institutional system of racism. And so I think if people come, they will quickly discover that, you know, this is not about talking about people's individual attitudes. I'm a person. I'm intelligent, fairly good looking. I got a great personality. If you don't like me, I really don't care about that. If you don't want to be around me, that is not going to make me lose one ounce of sleep. My concern is, as the late Kwame Ture said, if a white man wants to lynch me, that's his problem. If he has the power to lynch me, that's my problem. That's what we're talking about.
Ah, I see. Moving from thought to action. A real big difference there. James in Grants Pass is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ajamu Umi.
Yes. This is an issue that I'm really interested in, and I don't believe that there's any such thing as racism, since there's only one race of human beings on the planet today. We're all human beings. We're all alike. We come in different colors. The colors don't matter. So instead of racism, I'd like to replace that word with ignorance.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for that, James. Appreciate
well,
it.
Well, and I think, you know, the gentleman speaks like an angel. Unfortunately, we live on Earth. I mean, that's a great concept, what he says, but, you know, that there's overwhelming evidence that there's racism. So, you know, that would be great if we lived in Disneyland. That would be wonderful, what he said, but we don't. And the world we live in doesn't exist inside of his head. It exists in material reality, and so that's what we're dealing with, unfortunately. I wish it was true. I wish it was that simple. It would make my life a lot easier.
Right. Is racism often cloaked in something that is explained away by something else in terms of, like, well, I have nothing against people who are, you know, darker skinned than I am. I just think that culturally they come from neighborhoods where blah, 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 you know. You finish the sentence yourself there. I mean, is it often cloaked in those kinds of terms?
Well, it is, but again, you know, we're talking about a systematic process. The systematic process develops and perpetuates people's individual attitudes, not the other way around. So it's cloaked in how this system functions in ways that most of us don't even question. Like, for example, a lot of people who are listening and consider themselves progressive-minded people are getting ready right now to celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday, which is nothing but a racist perpetuation of values that are designed to justify the theft of land here, which is no question a racist process. Good people are going to be sitting down to celebrate this holiday. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about systematic, you know, manifestations of how this thing works.
We have an email from Stephen Eugene. He says he thinks the racism problem can be solved by including the following language in the U.S. Constitution. Section 2, I'm not sure what the Section 1 was. Henceforth, the government shall not identify its citizens by religion, heritage, ethnicity, and or race, except regarding the existing historical record. Henceforth, the government shall not question its citizens regarding religion, heritage, ethnicity, and or race, except to ask, yes or no, are you a citizen of the United States of America? A citizen shall be known as an American. This is from Steve in Eugene. Which brings me to the broader issue. We've talked about the educational system, the financial system, the legal system up to a point, particularly as in terms of incarceration and how unequal that is by race in America. The political system, though, is there much hope that you see working within the existing political system, particularly given the context of the recent election?
You know, I think that everything that has been gained through the electoral process has happened because there's been a movement behind it that pushed the established order in a positive direction. There would be no women's suffrage without the movement that pushed for that. There would be no civil rights without the movement that pushed for that. There would be no same-sex marriage without the movement that pushed for that. So people have to understand, you have no power when you go to the electoral process without a movement behind it. And that's something else that we talk about a great deal in the workshop. You know, we've gotten this analysis of history that individuals make change, and individuals don't make change. The masses of people make change. So we've got to get people involved if we want to solve these problems.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left to talk to Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ajamu Umi, the organizer of the workshop, Racism 101.
Hi, well, I was just reading in the paper the police are gearing up for the National Guard's been called into Ferguson, Missouri.
For the grand jury
for
opinion.
The verdict.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me, I was in L.A. during the Rodney King riots, and it was really interesting because some kids were playing in my balcony and going up my stairs, and I'm like, yes, go to the park. They're like, hey, lady, haven't you heard? It's blacks against whites. You know, the parks are closed. I'm like, no, it's not blacks against white. It's justice and injustice. And I said, I am just as mad as anybody. I saw the injustice and those cops beating that man. I saw that video. And I think that what would be really helpful is if we start to understand that any injustice done to anyone is an injustice to all, and that we all need to understand the powers that be don't want us to work together. It's really, I mean, and then I thought of the O.J. Simpson, and how, because he had fame and wealth, he that was a different type of injustice. So I just wonder if how you address that, because I think classism and racism, they're all intertwined, and it's a way to divide and conquer we the people for the benefit of the few and the powers that be that control kind of how we think.
All right. Thanks for that, Pam.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Ajamu, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. And that's a lot of what we're talking about today, is trying to bring that, what the lady talked about, into focus for people. It's not a conversation that we have often in this society, and it's one we need to have much more.
Well, I think she's giving an echo of what you were talking about earlier, too, that from your perspective, that the people who have lots of money like it when the people who don't have lots of money fight with each other, because then it keeps the attention off of them.
Right.
So the workshops, again, will be tonight at 6:30 at the Newman United Methodist Church at 6th and B Streets in Grants Pass. And then tomorrow, Wednesday, November 19th, at 6 o'clock straight up at 228 North Holly Street in Medford. That's the NALC building about a block north of the Holly Theater. Ajamu, it's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It always is. Looking forward to it.
All right. Pleasure to have you here. The workshop is Racism 101. Ajamu Umi is the deliverer of the workshop and an organizer in the All-African People's Revolutionary Party. Thanks again for joining us today, Ajamu.
Yeah, you have a good day.